I teach young adults theology and philosophy twice a week. On Mondays, I teach, actually it's a reflection on the readings of the following Sunday. And on Wednesdays, we have we're now doing a thematic study of the entire Bible. Let me just start by inviting any of you who are young adults. On Mondays, we study the following Sunday's scripture readings. And on Wednesdays, it's more of a thematic Bible study. I interpret young adults all the way up to 40. The rest of us are just old. So any of you young adults who would like to join us, every Monday and Wednesday from 7 to 9 in room 219. The reason I started that way is because one of the ways that we begin each of the classes is to introduce everybody. And there's no registration, there's no cost and anything. People show up. And so we're constantly having to do introductions. And the way we do introductions is to state your name and what do you do for a living. And then we come up with some kind of a question. Sometimes it's profound, sometimes it's nonsensical. A few weeks ago, the question that we chose was, if you had to be a character on television, what would you be? Or who would you be? Who would you be if you had to pick a character from TV? And lots of people were picking different people. When it came to me, I knew that what was about to say was not going to be extremely well received. Because one of my favorite characters and the character that I would like to be is Dr. House. Now, allow me to explain for any of you, you already heard the crowd going, huh? Why Dr. House? Who he is? Dr. House is, it's on reruns right now. And went on for quite a long time. But he is a brilliant doctor who is a diagnostician, and he is a very bitter and angry atheist. And whenever the TV episodes run, he is constantly taking people who are religious and poking them, and poking them. And he is constantly, he's an atheist, and he's trying to prove to a lot of people that God does not exist. But, and again, if you ever watch House, it's a very well-written show. But the question is, why would I want to be him? And the reason is because he has a spirit about him, although I think he is mentally ill too, which there is a certain similarity. But I think that he has a spirit about him about not being satisfied with superficial answers to profound questions. He refuses to be satisfied. And he does not have a lot of respect for people who are just willing to accept whatever without having really thought it out. And what he does is he needles people to ask them to really think through what they are, their answers. And the problem a lot of times, of course, with House, not the problem, but what I think he dislikes, or maybe I'm projecting and I dislike the most, is superficial religion or superficial atheism, superficial anything, really. I don't harass people, but I just kind of quietly shake my head. And the reason, if you think about it, why superficial really turns me off is because even Jesus, I think I'm in decent company anyway, in the book of Revelations, Jesus makes this statement. He says, I would that you were either hot or cold, but because you are lukewarm, I spit you out of my mouth. And that is a direct quote from the book of Revelations, from Jesus speaking. What am I talking about in terms of superficiality? And there is, to some degree, all of us are going to go through a superficial stage. I really have a belief that the reason why the church is filled mostly with older people is because the longer you live, the more you know there's something wrong. And all of the things that you thought life was going to be like, you enter disillusionment. And you end up saying, what's this about? And why am I alive? And what's the purpose of it all? And of course, that's, House is very, he's an angry man, and he's a bitter man. He lives in pain because of a situation with his leg. But he has that spirit of not being satisfied, of asking questions. And it reminds me of people like Socrates. You know, Socrates, quoted by Plato, Socrates said, the unexamined life is not worth living. The unexamined life is not worth living. Socrates went about constantly asking questions, and asking questions of people to make them think. And it's a very interesting perspective because Socrates was ultimately condemned to death. And the reason he was condemned to death was that he was, quote, endangering or corrupting the faith in the gods that the young people of Athens had. And the only thing he was doing was telling them to think and telling them to ask questions. In other words, go beyond the superficiality of what everybody does. I'm not saying that you all have to reinvent and be a theologian, but at least you have to be curious. At least you should ask questions. Now, that's part of what I love about being Catholic. I love being Catholic. Because, you know, when I was in the seminary, I never saw a single person ever get expelled or questioned, treated negatively because they were asking questions. In fact, I saw the exact opposite. I saw a lot of guys in the seminary who wanted everything taught to them very, two, three, everything is just exactly that way. And they didn't want anybody asking questions. And those were the guys who were ultimately asked to leave because the church doesn't need yes people. The church needs men and women who are thinkers and who are willing to communicate the gospel. Now, granted, you can grow, and I think House is here. House may be so committed to the questions that he may be closed to the answers. There is such a thing as And I encountered it in my own life because I love philosophy and I love theology. And there met much, you can come to a point that you're in so in love with the questions that you almost don't want them answered because you want them to be there. And House can, is, I think, is close to that. But here's why I'm talking about that. Because both Socrates and House, and probably, and several others, in plays and in literature and in other things, they are aware of the fact that something is wrong with the way that we are. That something is wrong with human life. I think that what happens is that the young, when you're young, you get this idea of, you have a life, a kind of a picture of what life is supposed to be like. I see it in the kids that I work with. And I remember it all on my own. When I was growing up, some of you older people will remember the TV series. And I thought life was going to be that. My favorite TV show that I wanted to be like was, there was a TV show called My Three Sons. And some of you older people might remember My Three Sons. And there was a guy there that I admired. His name was Fred McMurray. And I thought, that's the way I want to be. And things like Leave It to Beaver and the Donna Reed Show. And I thought, oh, that is going to be so awesome to be like that. And then you grow up and you find out that life isn't like TV. Life isn't like what you thought. And every generation, by the way, you, those of you who are younger here, that was our reality back in the 60s. Your reality is different. I don't know it 100%, but I can 100% guarantee you that reality is not the way you're imagining it to be. It just ain't that way. And so it's then that you begin to enter into the area of, so what is, if that is not reality, if what I thought life was going to be like is not what life is like, then what is life supposed to be? What is it that we're supposed to be doing? And how come I have a hunger? How come I have this desire? And everything I try leaves me half empty. And I go to the next thing and to the next thing and to the next thing, and it always leaves me, you know, I think, oh, it's over right here. And then once you get there, you go, ah. And then you go to the next thing and your next thing. And sooner or later, we all get tired. You get tired of what's the next thing. And you find out there is none. And that's when you begin saying, so then what's the purpose of living? What's the point? Now, why am I talking about that? I'm talking about that because of the statement of Jesus today that is, to me, one of the strongest statements in all of Scriptures. I am the way, the truth, and the life. I am the way, the truth, and the life. Now, I would like you to consider that statement. Because throughout history, there are countless religious leaders that have talked about God. And they've even founded religions. God knows, you know, Muhammad, Buddha, Lao Tzu, people throughout the world that have founded religions. But at no moment has anyone stepped into history and said, I am truth. Now think about that. Think about somebody standing before you and saying to you, I am truth. Not I know the truth. I am the truth. I am life itself. No one comes to God unless they come through me. Now, I don't know about you, but when you first hear that, that sounds incredibly arrogant. It sounds incredibly arrogant. No one comes to God except through me. That's why C.S. Lewis would always say, look, when you're dealing with Jesus, the one thing you cannot say about Jesus was he was a good prophet, a nice guy. And the reason you can't say that is because he would say you've got three choices. Somebody who says stuff like that is either a liar, a lunatic, or he is the Lord standing before you. It's one of those three. You can't say that he was a great guy, but he deceived humankind either willfully or he deceived humankind because he was nuts. You can't have it any other way. That's why Jesus' main question to his disciples was always, who do people say that I am? And then he looked at them and he said, who do you say that I am? Throughout the Gospels, this man is claiming constantly to be the identity of God. That's why when Philip says to him, show us the Father, and that will be enough. Notice he says, how long have I been with you, and you do not know me? The Father is speaking. Now, if you take this stuff seriously, it makes you dizzy. It makes you dizzy because what's standing before you is the possibility that there is a real meaning and truth and a way to access the truth and life in our situation. Now, you may be at a point in your life where you're just saying, whatever. That's postmodernism for everybody. You know, the great way people respond today to when they're intellectually lazy is, whatever. And if that's you, okay, sooner or later you're going to face it. And it's going to be super important how you answer those questions. But for us who are increasingly trying to believe, now please understand, when I use the word believe, I use the word believe in a very specific way. Because let me give you an example very quickly. If I say to you, I believe in the Leaning Tower of Pisa. I've never seen it. I've never been there. But I have seen pictures. But I've also seen what you can do with Photoshop. I know that you can make the Leaning Tower of Pisa out of nothing but different components of a photograph. If there turned out to be no Leaning Tower of Pisa, it's not going to affect my life. Okay, so I was wrong. So what? I was wrong. I believed it, but I was wrong. But now, what if you're about to have a very complicated brain surgery? That's really, your life is in the balance. And your neurosurgeon comes to your bedside before you go under, and you say to him, I believe in you. Are you using the word believe in the same way that you did when you said, I believe in the Leaning Tower of Pisa? Heck no. What you're saying is, I trust you. I'm putting my life in your hands. That's the word believe in two totally different senses. And that's why the word faith is the same thing. I have faith in you. That's why for those of us who are struggling as you get older and as the questions of life become existential and no longer just conceptual. See, you can study this stuff when you're in high school or in college, but it's still way off. But when you get older, I'm about to turn 68, this stuff becomes existential, meaning you're no longer thinking about it. Gracious God, you're feeling it. And your entire body is understanding that those are not just intellectual questions. Your body is actually decomposing under you. And you start asking the questions about the future of people you love, the future of your own self, and the meaning of life. And you look back on life and you go, what the hell is that all about? And so the answers become ever more critical. That's why I always like to use the example of, you know, when people are swimming in a swimming pool and the guy jumps in, the lifeguard jumps in and says, I'm here to save you. And if you're having a great time and you're doing fine, you look at the guy and you say, hey, thank you so much. You're an awesome dude. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. That, bye. I'm having a nice time. But if 5 minutes later you're drowning and the same dude jumps in and swims over to you and says, I'm here to save you, it's exactly the same guy. It's exactly the same message, but now it's the most critical message in your life. And why is it different? Because you are existentially drowning. And that's why when people talk about being saved, I'm always going, do you know what the heck that means? Do you have any idea? And I think most of us, am I saved? Am I saved? You have no idea until you begin to understand it. That's why today the statement of Jesus is so important. Who in God's green earth is this man? Who is he? And if he is life, and if you ask Jesus, by the way, why did you come? Jesus has a specific answer. I love this answer because it's the question is what I have. He answers it. He says, I have come that you may have life and have it to the full. Yes. I know what that means. Because as you get older, you're having less of it. And your body is going, bleh, and you're going, where's the life that I want? And you don't want to die. And so when he says, I have come to fulfill your dreams and hopes of living and of fullness that you've never achieved, that is to me, that's the end point. And I want to know how to get to that truth. Show me the way. And Jesus is saying, I am the way. Follow me. That's why I'm a Christian. That's why I'm a priest. That's why I became this. I did not become a priest because I like to celebrate Mass. Because I like dressing up. And I did not become a priest so I can do church budgets. And I can do all kinds of stuff. I became a priest because, and I am a Christian because it's the only freaking chance I have of life. That's the point. And so, when he says stuff like that, I am the way, the truth, and the life. Yes, sir. That's what I want. And he's saying that to everybody in the world. Even to non-Christians. Non-Christians who do not know Jesus can be saved. Why? Because everybody wants life. And as long as you are reaching for life, the best way you know how to reach for it, God is honored by you reaching for it. It's kind of, I always like to use the example, if you're drowning and if you're blind, but you're drowning, somebody gives you a hand, you have no idea who it is that's pulling you up, but somebody's pulling you up. You may think it's your Uncle Tom pulling you up, but it's Jesus pulling you up. The fact that you're wrong about the identity of who's pulling you up doesn't mean that you can't cooperate with being pulled up. And so I wanted to remind us all today about the centrality of why we're here. Folks, this is not about coming to church. I about want to hit my head in a wall when I hear people say, well, I go to church. So what? Do you know what this is about? Do you know why we're here? And why we're here is because our lives depend on it. And I understand. If you would have told me this stuff when I was a teenager, I would have blown you off. I mean, I still remember the nuns telling me, Jesus loves you. And I remember thinking, so what? You know, or he died to save you. And I remember thinking, well, I didn't ask him to do that. That's his problem. But then you begin to understand what is going on. And I just hope and pray that all of us, little by little, that the Holy Spirit begins to open your mind. And he will. Sooner or later, you're going to crash. You're going to burn, and you're going to figure it out. That's why I welcome all of you old people here. Because at least I think you're starting to get it. And some of you young people actually are. But many old people. Jesus is our only hope for life. And he is the truth. And he is the way that we have to go. God bless. Thanks for listening to me.